And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast on a Monday afternoon in New York City, where the single biggest question in the NBA has been answered. And the question was not, will Anthony Davis turn down the Supermax? I and many others have been predicting since the summer that he would, in fact, turn down the Supermax. He began telegraphing it as such a month or so ago. So the biggest remaining question was, will he actually wait until the summer to make his intentions known? And that was emphatically answered today when Adrian Wojnarowski reported via Rich Paul's statement that Anthony Davis had requested a trade. Here to break this all down, dealing with illness and many other obstacles, ESPN insider, NBA writer extraordinaire Brian Windhorst, how you doing?
I either have pneumonia or I'm fine. It's either one or the other. So.
And then you've never been on this podcast for us to do this, but then we get to say the three most exciting words in the history of niche basketball podcasts in studio. What up, Beck?
Beck.
What up? I do not think I have pneumonia, so that's I'm one step ahead of Wendy at least. I hope Wendy's okay. That's a big spread there between either fine or pneumonia.
So this
I'll
is
either be at the Laker 76er game tomorrow night, or I'll be in the hospital, one or the other. So
two very good teams to talk about today in relation to Anthony Davis. So this is a star-studded Low Post podcast. Two of the core MVP level guests and the sorry hosts who they have to carry all the time on here to talk about what I have deemed in a column potentially the most impactful and important trade of an NBA veteran since Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was traded to the Lakers. And so here we are. Wendy, I'll start with you. Is there any way to read this other than a power play to try and get him to the Lakers? That's the Occam's razor here in terms of the why not wait. Now, you can say, as Rich Paul has said, and I think that Rich Paul's being honest, that, look, it's run its course. He doesn't want to be there. He knows he doesn't want to be there. Why wait an extra 10, 11, 12 days or months or whatever? Why not just get the ball rolling now, see if he can salvage this season for himself, they can salvage this season for themselves. The finger injury just killed them. That was the last straw. They've lost three in a row. They're out of the playoff race. They're six games out with 30 games left and five teams to jump. The odds are just astronomically against them. Even given all that, the Occam's razor is there is a mutual multi-layered interest to get him to the Lakers, and accelerating the timetable is the best way to do that for the simple reason that the Celtics, who are equipped to, I think, make the best offer, and we can talk about what that offer will be, cannot bid as long as they have Kyrie Irving on the roster. And let's address the elephant in the room first. Many people will say, well, they could trade Kyrie Irving. They could trade him to New Orleans. They could trade him to a third team. They can do whatever they want. They're the Celtics. They have all the trade chips in the world. They do not want to trade Kyrie Irving, period. Their goal is to pair Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis. They have always viewed Kyrie as the main carrot that would convince Anthony Davis to stick around Boston. Now what they could get for him, I don't know, but that has been their strategy and their plan. They don't want to deviate that from that. They are not going to. I would be blown away if they did. Now, you could argue that today's news shows that, well, Anthony Davis doesn't want to play with Kyrie above all else, or else he wouldn't have done this. But so give me the Occam's razor interpretation. The Occam's razor is this is about the Lakers. Is there any reason, Wendy, for that not to be the takeaway that most people should have?
Do I want to blow Zach's podcast up in the first minute or not? I'm trying to think. Do I want to talk about the possibility that Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis could play for the Lakers, or should I just let that go? And we should
You just did it now.
So Anthony Davis has pulled one lever, which is to ask for a trade. Really, it's sort of multidimensional. He didn't have to ask for a trade. Is just announcing that he is not going to sign the extension effectively is asking for a trade. But he went ahead and did it. His other lever is to, and the one he's holding in reserve is to say, I only want to play for X number of teams or one team. And that has yet to happen, although I suspect it could happen. There's really only 3.5 or 4 teams in the Anthony Davis market, really. I suppose there's some creative teams that could they could do a rental for Anthony Davis and then think they could flip him again to one of those teams.
Stop. But
Anthony Davis could just end all this by saying, I want to play for the Lakers. And then it would come down to what the stomach level is in the Pelicans organization and whether that's a Dell Demps call, whether that's a Mickey Loomis call, the man who oversees the Pelicans and the Saints, or whether that's a Gail Benson, the relatively new owner of the Saints. And
two
Pelicans
of those people
call.
Seem unqualified to make that call. Just going to throw that out there. It's a bad sign that two of the people that you just mentioned.
I'm not going to ask which two because then it's going to start sounding insulting.
Right. So, you know, I think we're not all the way there yet. Anthony Davis hasn't, I don't want to use fired the bullet. I don't like that connotation. Anthony Davis hasn't played the last ace that he's got in his hand yet. And when and if he plays that ace is really going to determine if all of a sudden we hear in 6 days that there's traction between Philadelphia and New Orleans and all of a sudden Anthony Davis comes out or it's communicated in some way he wants to be a Laker, then I think we have the next layer of this. And I think that's what's sitting out there, what we're waiting for. And certainly, when you talk to teams in the NBA today, that's what they're waiting for.
People, it's almost February. Have you already failed your New Year's resolutions? We all resolve to be healthy, and an easy way to be a little healthier is to use the Quip electric toothbrush instead of the old-fashioned, worn-out, non-electric toothbrush, the tired one you've been using. Why? It has sensitive sonic vibrations for an effective clean that's gentle on your sensitive gums. It alerts you when it's time to switch sides so that you A, brush for the recommended 2 minutes, and B, brush equally all over your mouth for all those 2 minutes, and don't brush too hard or brush too much on one place. Brush heads are automatically delivered on a dentist recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5, and that's a nice reminder to get when it's time to sort of freshen up. 75% of people use old, worn-out toothbrushes. Stop doing that. Quip is the first electric toothbrush accepted by the American Dental Association. They're backed by over 25,000 dental professionals, have thousands of verified 5-star reviews. That's why a lot of people, over 1 million people, love Quip. Quip, best of all. You might think all this high-end electric toothbrush stuff, hundreds of dollars. No, Quip starts at just $25. And if you go right now to getquip.com/low, my last name, the name of this podcast, you can get your first refill pack for free. That's a good deal. That's your first refill pack free at getquip, getquip.com/low, L-O-W-E. Let's start with the Lakers. Look, everyone is saying you just offer everything. That's it. Whatever they want, you offer it. And I think that's probably what will happen. There are a couple of complicated realities to this. Number one, I saw somebody tweeted, you know, the offer would start at Lonzo, Kuzma, a first, and whatever. I think if you're New Orleans, it's got to be everybody. I don't think there's any combination of two of the young guys. Move Hart aside, because Hart is an interesting piece, but I don't think he's kind of as intriguing maybe as these other young guys. I think for the Pelicans, it has to be all of them. I don't even think Lonzo plus Ingram and no Kuzma is going to be enough for them.
I don't know how it's even a negotiation in that regard. None of these guys have distinguished themselves. You don't have an obvious future all-star in that mix. You have guys who have great upside still, and it's too young. They're too young to say that Brandon Ingram is never going to reach his potential or that Lonzo is never going to reach his potential. But as of right now, there's no one, much less even any two of those guys, that moves the needle enough. So, yeah, I'm starting with kitchen sink approach and picks as well, if you're New Orleans. And even then, to me, this is all academic. If I'm the Pelicans, I'm just simply not making a deal right now. I'm waiting till July 1st. I want Boston in the mix. They have the best assets.
Do you play Anthony Davis in the meantime? I don't. I hold him out in tank to get my own pick in line.
I think that's reasonable.
I tell Anthony, you can play in the All-Star game, but you've played your last game for us. Go home to L.A. You're going to wait. Because I think the other team is the Knicks, and you're going to want to know where the Knicks pick is. I mean, the Knicks' best asset to me is not Porzingis. He's coming off a torn ACL. It's their pick, and I don't want to trade Anthony Davis now that, you know, the Knicks have just figured out how to tank. I want to find out where that pick is. I think this is an organizational decision. This is something the owner has to decide. The owner has to decide whether you're going to make a deal with the Lakers. The owner has to decide whether you can stomach sending Anthony Davis home, tanking the rest of this year, and waiting for the other picks. Because especially with where the lottery has changed, I know that if I was making the deal, not only would I want Boston in the bidding, I'd want to know I'd want to know the draft order. I wouldn't make the deal till after the lottery.
Speaking of the lottery, by the way, I don't know that this has become I just sort of landed on this today because I haven't been thinking about the lottery all that much. But the new rules are the three worst teams get the same odds.
Yes.
Right now we have four really robust candidates to be among the three worst teams.
I mean,
four robust, aggressive, like you just tip your hat to the degree of tanking going on between the Bulls, the Knicks, the Cavs, and the Suns. But if you told the Hawks before the season, you guys
yesterday, an incredible Bulls Cavs game yesterday. It was incredible.
I watched that game. I watched it. You know why? That's my eating your vegetables game. If I can get two of them out of the way in one game, I do it. Now the downside of that is it can be such a bad game that it becomes unwatchable. That was actually fairly watchable. Can you imagine if you told Travis Schlenk before the season, you're going to have no chance. You're going to be so far ahead that you can't even get in the bottom four, let alone the bottom three, because these other four teams are going to be so horrifically bad. So over the weekend, I had heard from two separate teams that Mirotić, Randall, and Moore had all been made available for picks. And now New Orleans is known for perhaps playing some misdirection, so these teams didn't know what to make of this. One team made of it, their guess and or impression was New Orleans was trying to get picks that it could then flip for a big, big piece in a save-the-season trade. Mike Conley, for instance, would be somebody to fit that bill. Another team's interpretation was, A, we don't know, maybe they're giving up, or B, maybe it's as simple as because of Randall's bird rights situation and their general cap situation, they're only going to be able to re-sign one of Mirotić and Randall, so why not try to monetize the other one now for whatever you can get? But I thought that was interesting, and then when this news broke this morning, everything sort of either didn't quite fit together, but New Orleans has clearly been up to stuff, and now here we are, and the Lakers are going to offer, I would assume, everything, because I don't think anything short of everything is enough. The interesting wrinkle is, if they trade all the young guys for Davis now, if literally the only stuff left on their books this summer is LeBron, Anthony Davis, and Luol Deng's stretched $5 million. Luol Deng's, by the way, frisky right now for the Minnesota Timberwolves. They only have like $30 million in cap space. They don't quite have enough for like the third guy. And you know they want the third guy. Now, they can wait another summer and then get the third guy when the cap goes up again. But I think that's been an underrated sort of subplot here, is that the cleanest path to build the LeBron super team is sign a max free agent this summer, whoever that is.
Kyrie Irving.
And then Kyrie Irving, Klay Thompson, name whoever it is. And then trade the boatload of young guys then for Anthony Davis. Now, it's doable to do it the other way. It's just mechanically easier to do it my way because of, you know, when you start trading, cobbling together all the salaries, you get a little bit more of a buffer zone with how much you can take out and how much you can take in. If they trade the full boat for AD now, I would be very interested to see what their pathway is to the third guy other than just wait another year, right?
Well, unless the third guy comes for less than the max.
Could be.
But I mean, to what Howard said, I've sort of equated, just today as I've been thinking about this, I've been equating what's at the Lakers' doorstep right now is what happened when Steve Ballmer bought the Clippers. If you remember, when the Clippers were an asset that people had coveted for decades, many L.A. businessmen tried to get the Clippers off Donald Sterling over the course of the 80s, 90s, 2000s. They finally become available, and you have a number of people making huge bids. And they analyze the books and they make this bid, $1.4 billion, $1.3 billion, $1.5 billion. Steve Ballmer's like, this never becomes available. I tried to buy a team already. It didn't work out. All right, $2 billion and I'm writing the check right now. I get it today. And I think that's kind of what the Lakers have in front of them here. They've played their gambit with Paul George, didn't work. They, you know, didn't go whole hog in for Kawhi Leonard. I don't know if the Spurs would have traded him anyway, but didn't work. Now they have it, you know, in their chance to get this rare asset. I don't think you can let it pass without throwing all the money on the table, all the relative money on the table. And I would also say, when you look at, there's a couple of things. One, I'm seeing people out there on Twitter putting together these trade packages, making 5-for-1 offers. There's got to be 15 guys on each roster when it's over. I know that there's guys on the New Orleans roster that can be throw-ins, like Tim Frazier, Cheick Diallo, or whatever, but you can't make a 5-for-1 deal. This is not July. Secondly, if I'm New Orleans, in addition to picks and players, I want off any toxic assets. If I'm talking to the Lakers are taking Solomon Hill off of my hands too. I want to get every single possible asset and maneuver in this deal. If I can get 2 first-round picks, great. In the off year, I want a pick swap. Even though it's unlikely for it to happen, I want it all. I want everything in this deal. And I think, like Ballmer when he bought the Clippers, it's incumbent on the Lakers to pretty much say yes to just about all of it, because the Lakers' best chance to make this deal is in the next 10 days. After that, it makes it harder, unless Anthony Davis comes out and says, I will play for the Lakers and the Lakers only, and I just don't know if he's ready to do that.
Listeners, you know I love everything that can save me time. And a few years ago, buying tickets to sporting events or concerts or Broadway shows or whatever was just becoming too complicated. There were hundreds of sites on the secondary market. You would spend an hour searching and think, oh my gosh, did I forget to check that place? Oh my God, what if there's a better deal on that place? How reliable is this place that I'm about to buy from? 2 hours have gone by. You will never get them back. SeatGeek solves all of those problems for you. It makes buying tickets simple, easy, one-stop shopping. It searches almost all of those secondary market ticket sites and puts them all into one place. It grades every ticket based on value, location, all that stuff. It has a very easy to use system, color coded. Green dots are good deals. Red dots are maybe less good deals. It's easy to see where every seat is. And best of all, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. It should be your go-to source for every kind of ticket. And best of all, my listeners, you fine folks get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. That's still a significant part of an NBA ticket or a football game or a baseball game, whatever you want to do. All you have to do, download the SeatGeek app. Enter promo code LOW, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast, promo code LOW for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event, and we have the tickets.
I don't care what the Celtics say, privately or publicly. They're sweating. They're trying to project calm. I think they are calm. I mean, they still have a lot of great stuff. They don't get Anthony Davis. They're still going to be a really good team for a long time. But they want Anthony Davis. And
They've been worried about this for 6 to 8 weeks.
Sure. And over the weekend, when the Pelicans lost their third straight game, and I looked at the standings on Saturday morning or whatever it was, one of the first thoughts that went through my head after, you know, A, they're out of it, was B, boy, the Celtics have to start sweating now because they're out of it. And if the Pelicans are out of it, that means a lot of stuff could happen. And now a lot of stuff could happen. And they got to just sweat through the 10 days now. They can try and go maneuver and get some stuff that the Pelicans might want now and, you know, to stock up for this summer. But they got to sweat through these 10 days. I don't really think there's a third way around it. I don't see them trading Kyrie. And I think the other interesting question, so interesting question number one is, do the Lakers have to trade everything? And I think it's yes. I don't think keeping Kuzma is getting it done and all that. I think the other thing is I would almost be fascinated if we get, if we got to the summer, can the Celtics get him without putting Tatum in the deal? Is one of the most interesting questions in the league. Does Tatum have to be in, or is everything but Tatum, literally everything, pick everything, Rozier, Smart, the Kings pick, the Grizzlies pick, top 8 protected, we'll see what happens with that. The Clippers pick, lottery protected, we'll see what happens with that. A future pick. Who did I forget? Jaylen Brown, whoever. Is all of it enough? Or does it become Tatum or bust? I think that, because if you could throw Kyrie, Tatum, AD going forward, you are set for a long time. And I didn't even mention Hayward, because I do think Hayward would. Couldn't you see the Pelicans talking themselves into Hayward? Got to stay relevant, big name veteran, blah blah blah. I think the Tatum question is fascinating, but they got to be sweating, right, HBEC?
Yes, to all of that, but I think they're. The card that the Celtics can play that nobody else can play is that if they're willing to include Tatum, that's something you can signal now, right? But you do more than signal. You can actually tell them now, hey, wait till July 1st and we're willing. I mean, I don't think that's a kind of conversation that actually can or will happen. But if you're worried enough and you know that you've got the one piece that nobody else has, a guy who's better than anybody the Lakers can offer, and you've got all this other stuff.
And it's not close, by the way. I've seen a lot of hand-wringing. My boy Bill Simmons has been fretting about Tatum here or there. Tatum's fine. Tatum is really good. It hasn't been the incremental leap that a lot of people, I think, wrongly expected, and the same thing happened with Donovan Mitchell until the last 2 weeks. Tatum's fine. Tatum's a blue-chip, all-star prospect, as much as he was 6 months ago.
Yeah. But that's where the Celtics should have some confidence still. Like, you're going to sweat a little because it's 10 days before the trade deadline and you just don't know.
I wouldn't be able to sleep. How am I supposed to? If I worked for the Celtics, I wouldn't sleep. Because you don't know. You wake up at 3 a.m. because your cat meows if you have a cat and you look at your phone and Woj just tweeted something and it could be like Marquise Chris, his agent is requesting a trade and you're like, ah, god damn it, I woke up for Marquise Chris, he stinks. But it could also be Anthony Davis has told the Lakers he wants to go there.
I have an answer. They gotta do it like with security or with those cop stakeout movies. You sleep in shifts. Danny Ainge, you're up until 2 a.m. Zarin,
I think he's a practicing Mormon. He can't drink caffeine.
Danny goes to bed at 11 o'clock, a decent hour. Zarin takes over, caffeinated.
Zarin doesn't sleep. I don't think Zarin sleeps on an average day.
He's a maniac.
I know this is true because I once heard from Zarin in a series of texts at a strange hour over something that I won't go into right now. But Zarin takes over in the wee hours. And then if he gets a little, he starts nodding off. You got the rest of the front office. You could get all the way down to your scouts if you have to. Somebody will monitor the text. But the fact is, the Celtics have the Jason Tatum card to play, and the Lakers do not have the equivalent. And if other teams wanted to jump in and just start throwing crazy offers, does Chicago build something around Lowry Markkanen? Do the Kings?
I can speak to that. One thing that is been made clear, and this could change, but I do not believe that Anthony Davis would like to play for the Bulls, even though it's his hometown. You talk about Wendell Carter and Lowry Markkanen and their first round pick. Those are, I'm not saying you give all three, but those assets right there are enough to get anybody interested in any deal. But I do not think that you will hear Anthony Davis say that he would like to play hometown.
And the reason I bring it up, Brian, is simply this, that if we're going to look at this through the prism of what happened with Paul George, right? Paul George only wants to play in L.A. He's going to L.A. He's going home. He wants to play in L.A. Lo and behold, they make a deal that turned out very well for them when the Pacers sent him to Oklahoma City. And lo and behold, Paul George stays. And, we can talk about Kawhi in Toronto. If the Pelicans are going to do what they're supposed to do in this situation, which is do what's best for the Pelicans, don't worry about what signals Anthony Davis is saying. I know that changes the trade market. I know that can screw up their leverage. But the Pelicans have to just make the best deal. The best deal is not available to them in the next 10 days. The best deal available to them is on July 1st, not only because of the possibility of Tatum, but the pressure that possibility that applies to all the other bidders, whether anybody is holding out up until that time. And, of course, by that time, we have clarity over who has Zion Williamson, which if you think that he is a game changer and a franchise star.
You know what I think Zion Williamson is? I've only watched highlights of Zion
Williamson. He's a cool name. Just a cool name.
He looks like Lawrence Taylor became a basketball player. He looks like a freaking linebacker.
He's way bigger than Lawrence Taylor.
It just looks implausible to me. When I see highlights of him, I'm glad you brought up the Bulls, both of you, we're going to go through. Wendy, I might let you off before this because you sound like death warmed over there and you need a nap. We're going to go through some fake trades and the Bulls are on the list. I mean, you could throw Jabari in there as both salary filler and, a fake intriguing player that New Orleans could fake be excited about. So their fans could fake be excited. But some realities. Number one, wherever you trade Anthony Davis, the future picks you're getting are by definition not as exciting as they seem today because the team gets Anthony Davis. And will not be terrible. And number two, I mean, it's the most obvious thing looming over this. Even though he's under guaranteed contract for next season, then he's a free agent. He can do whatever he wants. And if your team stinks, he's not going to stay. So if the Chicago Bulls trade literally the only things on the entire team worth being excited about playing with, then I don't see, like, come stay and play with Chris Dunn, who's 26 and still stinks, is not an appealing sales pitch if Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter are playing for a different team. And by the way, we can go through all these fake trades, right? Like, every team in the league, almost every team in the league, could make a good bid for Anthony Davis, because the bid is best young player, throw as many picks as you want in, and salary filler. Like, Utah could get in. Utah could easily get in. You know, throw Exum, three unprotected first round picks, Grayson Allen, whoever you want. You could, or Mitchell. Like, if you really want to get frisky, Mitchell, which they wouldn't do. But, like, he's not going to stay in Utah. Like, that's just, it's, I'm sorry.
All right,
for
well,
Utah.
But let's talk about a team that could penetrate, because I think there's three teams on Anthony Davis's list. I think Boston, the Knicks, and the Lakers are on the list, with the Lakers being number one. I think the Knicks are legitimate, though.
But see, if Boston were really on the list, and I don't know that there is a list, right? I got a good feel that there's a list. Well, there's certainly a list of organizations for which Anthony, that have the pedigree that Anthony Davis respects. I think the Heat are on that list, for instance, as just an organization where they have the assets is a different thing. But if he wants to get traded in the next 10 days, Celtics aren't on the list. That's my only point. Like, the Celtics have been
another team that you haven't talked about that is fascinating.
The Knicks. So give me the Knicks.
No.
No?
Philadelphia.
Oh, well, let's get that over with now. So talk to me about, give me your Philly take, because I've obviously, I have a lot of thoughts.
Well, there's two different ways this could go. I was just talking to a team. In fact, I had to inform them I had to do your podcast. I was just talking to a team, and they said, well, there's two different versions this could take. One, you could do a Jimmy Butler trade.
Yes.
Or you could do it depending on what New Orleans wants, because remember, Jimmy Butler's a free agent to be. You could
Who they chased in trade talks, by the way, aggressively.
That's true, but that was with Anthony Davis on the roster.
Yes.
You could go back to Houston.
Yep.
And see what's still there, and potentially re-engage Houston in a three-way trade. Or, and this is the interesting one, this is the one that'll really cause some friction. You need Philly to make it happen, but Ben Simmons for Anthony Davis.
Well, when I it's funnily enough, a month ago I wrote an Anthony Davis column, and 2 weeks ago I wrote a Philadelphia Sixers column, like, what if they'd ever traded Simmons? And I'm more optimistic than most people about the fit of Simmons, Embiid, and Butler, despite the ego battles that need to be smoothed over there. Simmons for Davis is the most obvious trade in both directions, but whichever perspective you are looking at this issue from, that's an obvious trade that's been sitting there. And again, it needs filler, whatever that filler is. I think, Brian, you know the complicating factors better than anyone, which is that Rich Paul represents both of them.
Agent?
Yeah, and right. So I don't know that Rich Paul, who is trying to get Anthony Davis out of New Orleans, is going to want Ben Simmons, his other crown jewel client, you know, 21 years old, whatever, to go to New Orleans.
That's fair, but Ben is under contract for several more years and then restricted. Rich cannot be happy, but he doesn't have control over that.
The Butler reroute is something I thought about this morning, really for the first time, because I just thought, if Anthony Davis is on the way out, I don't think 28, 29-year-old Jimmy Butler about to get a massive contract is really going to move the needle. But if you attached something else, I don't know what Markel Fultz is in terms of trade value, but if you attach that or the Heat's unprotected pick or something, you could make an appetizing offer out of that.
Well, there's no question. It's just, I don't know if Jimmy would end up in New Orleans. That's the only thing.
Right. And Houston, you know, will offer every pick they have. I mean, the picks are immaterial to the Rockets right now. They'll offer four. They did offer four. They'll offer four.
And this could all end up in New Orleans.
Yeah. Howard, you've covered the Knicks for a long time. You have were mercifully spared that beat several years ago, but you still live here and are close to them. This is a fascinating one to me because, on the one hand, the timing is good for the Knicks in that if you got Anthony Davis now, you got a hell of a carrot to throw at KD. On the other hand, you don't know what the hell KD is going to do. You'd have a better idea around the draft. If you had intel at the draft that KD wanted to come, then you can trade for Anthony Davis from a position of strength, not looking at the downside of, boy, if we trade Kristaps Porzingis, the best young player we've had since Patrick Ewing, for Anthony Davis, now in February, and we don't get KD, and we just stink again, and Anthony leaves, you might as well just suit James Dolan up and get booed for a year because it would be very, very bad.
Yeah. No, and this is the thing. The second I saw the chatter this morning about the Knicks and any involvement with AD, my first thought was, well, okay, the Zion Williamson pick would be, yeah, a really nice chip. Guess what? They don't have it. They may never have it, and we won't know for at least 3 months whether or not they have it. And this year more than others, by the way, do we assume that Tankathon has the full odds here correct? Cause it's the first thing I found. It's instructive to think about this. Even if the Knicks had the worst record in the league, and we all know they all have the same, bottom three have the same 14% chance at the top pick. For the worst team in the league, you have a 48% chance of picking fifth. So even if the Knicks could guarantee themselves the worst record in the league, they'd still have a better chance than not of picking fifth than first by a long shot. So there's no certainty there. The Knicks do not have a chip right now. If the trade's going to be made in the next whatever number of days before the trade deadline, 10 days, wherever we are, it's not the pick. The pick is I don't want to say worthless, but I just recorded a podcast with our draft guy, Johnny Wasserman, and I've talked to a bunch of people in the last several days in leading up to that about the strength of this draft. It may be a one-man draft. So just the idea of a top five pick from the Knicks that may or may not be Zion Williamson isn't going to be enough to get Anthony Davis. That plus a Kristaps Porzingis out a year with ACL, still has not seen a court, don't know what he looks like or whether he's the same guy. I mean, that's not – it's Anthony Davis. You're talking about trading an MVP-caliber player. I think, Zach, your assessment was – right on about possibly the most consequential trade since Kareem Abdul-Jabbar 100 years ago. So the Pelicans can't do this on in any package that gets them the vague idea of maybe something. It has to be a slam dunk. And the Knicks can't do that right now. They don't have the goods right now. They might if Porzingis comes back, plays well down the stretch, and they win the lottery. Now you've got something. But beyond that, or short of that, Kevin Knox did Porzingis and picks, and that's not going to get it done. It's not better than the possibility of what you get from Boston. It's not better than the cache of players that you could potentially get from the Lakers right now. And I'm not saying that with any disrespect to Porzingis. It's just that there's a big unknown there, and he's 7'3" coming off an ACL.
Brian, you seem intrigued by the Knicks as well.
I just know that the Knicks are on Anthony Davis's list, but I mean, in fairness, the Sixers were on LeBron's list, quote unquote, last summer. So, you know, it's the same guy running both shows. So I don't know where on the list they are.
Right. And Oklahoma wasn't on Paul George's list. And Toronto wasn't on Kawhi's list. I mean, the Pelicans will do, if they're smart, what Toronto and Indiana did, which was, we're just going to make the best deal we can get and not worry about whether the player says he's going to resign somewhere. Although, yes, that does impact potentially the return package.
Zach, if you were the Pelicans, would you let Dell Demps make this trade?
I mean,
because that could also factor into the timing.
Can I find a GM in the next 10 days?
Well, then you don't do it till the summer.
I don't think I would do it till the summer. However, you know, look, I wrote this a month ago. I was going to say, however, I would listen and see what shakes loose and not be afraid to do something now. It's just his looming free agency is such a powerful deterrent to so many teams. I mean, you've got to be certain that in 18 months you're going to be good and in an attractive market And there just aren't a lot of teams who check those boxes. The Lakers with LeBron, check it. The Celtics with whoever, check it. The Sixers, check it. I mean, I think Philadelphia is an attractive market. Chicago doesn't check the good box. And we can go, the Knicks don't check the good box yet. And then there's just a lot of teams who, there's a lot of franchises who just don't get in to these kind of things, like Charlotte, Detroit, Washington, on and on and on. They just don't have the cachet to get in.
It's difficult to know what the Pelicans want because we don't know how the owner feels. So if the Pelicans, like the Pacers, when they traded Paul George, they really didn't want to trade for draft picks. The Pacers have never been a team that have wanted to go down to the bottom. They've always wanted to be as competitive as possible. They feel like in their market, they can't afford a 12-win or 15-win season. So they prioritize getting players who are in the league right now. There are other teams, like, you know, the Cavs, for example, who have no problem bottoming out. They'll sign up for a bottoming out right now. We don't have the information to know what the stomach level of the ownership is. And that plays a huge factor because while we don't think that Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, and Kyle Kuzma are all-stars, you feel that team with Drew Holiday, that will be a team that will not stink. They will not be a competitor for the Western Finals, but they will not stink. We don't have that information. If the donor sends down the order, we're not going to be a 10-win team, then all of a sudden you do bring in teams like Washington because you bring Bradley Beal into the mix, something like that. And you get the Kentucky guys, and you think about Wall and Davis. But we don't know. That's what's so difficult here. And I don't know if anybody has the answer. I don't know if Gail Benson and Mickey Loomis have decided themselves which way it's going to be. And then we also don't know how hard Anthony Davis is going to push, whether he's going to go and drop the last ace and say, trade me to the Lakers and nobody else. And those are two giant unknowns that are factors here that make forecasting this, and not just for those of us who are in this business of watching it, but for the people who have to make the offers and negotiate with them, not having that information is vital.
Well, I think that's why you look for the thing that's the sweet spot, right? And the sweet spot is really good young player. So it's not the unknown of this sexy draft pick in 2022 that could be nothing or it could be something, and it's not even Bradley Beal, who's 25 or 26, or Jimmy Butler, who's 28. It's really good 22-year-old player. And those are the hardest things to find. And that's why when you look at teams who are maybe off this list of big market check, really good team with Anthony Davis and still has enough in the cupboard after getting Anthony Davis check, that may actually have the goods. I mentioned Utah. It's not going to happen. That's why, to me, a Denver deal is not crazy, because they can have Jamal Murray and build a whole offer around Jamal Murray. And Denver under Tim Connelly has been willing to sniff around some risky moves. And I'll bet you they'll sniff. I'll bet you there'll be phone calls between New Orleans and Denver. I don't think it'll lead anywhere because Denver, the path of least resistance for Denver is just sitting right in front of them. Their team is very good. All they have to do is keep it together. They're going to be very good for a very long time. But that's
also his old boss.
That's right. No, Tim worked in New Orleans for a long time. That to me is one, that makes sense because Jamal Murray fits that sort of like really good 23 and under player, already a lock to be an all-star level player for a long time. I have a few other fake trades that I think fit that bill. Do either of you want to throw in a team that we have not talked about yet?
Nobody's screaming, like nobody comes to mind that is an obvious one. I just think that teams that have multiple young pieces that are interesting, should at least, you know, lob a call.
So what about this? All this buzz, this is the next buzzy team now. They're over 500. They're out of the hole. They've risen from the grave like the Undertaker after taking 10 Jake the Snake Roberts DDTs. Okay. They're up. D'Angelo Russell, Jared Allen, the Nuggets pick, the Knicks second round pick, an unprotected future Brooklyn pick, some salary filler, and maybe one other thing. Why is that crazy? I've got Dinwiddie, I've got LeVert, I've got Anthony Davis. I've got Joe Harris. I have Brooklyn. I have cap space. To me, that's not crazy. I don't think it'll get the ball. I don't think it's enough. And I don't think Brooklyn will ever get past a phone call or two if they even get that far. But to me, that's not crazy.
I don't think it's crazy either. And I like the Nets are one of those teams that there are enough interesting pieces there and all their picks. My God, can we say that sentence again? The Nets have all of their picks. They have all their picks. They have some other stuff, and they've got a lot of interesting players. But they don't have that one guy. There's not a Jason Tatum or even a Lonzo
Ball. This is the sell-high moment on D'Angelo Russell right now.
No question.
D'Angelo Russell has turned the corner. He might make the All-Star team. He looks like a legit, like, run the offense, run a good NBA offense point guard.
He's also in an ideal situation there. And one of the things that came up, this came up a few days ago when it was looking like Spencer Dinwiddie, he's going to miss some time now. And somebody asked the question of Kenny Atkinson, are you encouraged by the fact that at least this is happening? You're losing Spencer at a time that D'Angelo Russell has just put in like the best 4 weeks of his tenure here or something like that. And as somebody immediately said to me, yeah, but he's put that's directly related. D'Angelo's been great because of Spencer Dinwiddie. And so what we don't know.
In terms of what?
That because Dinwiddie is the guy who he's their fourth quarter guy. They've been their clutch
guy. Not lately, though.
A little less so. It's been a little more balanced, and D'Angelo's had some big moments, too. But that Dinwiddie's presence has allowed D'Angelo Russell has put D'Angelo Russell in a position to not overdo it, to not be bad D'Angelo. And D'Angelo Russell as a sole guy, I mean, maybe he's not. Maybe he's sitting there playing with Drew Holiday, and maybe that works out well. I don't know. But do people trust what they've seen in D'Angelo Russell enough that that's a move you make? And besides that, he's a free agent this summer, and what if he doesn't want to stay in New Orleans? So the Nets have interesting pieces, but I don't know if there's that one great piece. I mean, Caris LeVert was their best player at the time he went down. That's the guy I'd actually be asking for if I'm New Orleans. Despite his injuries.
Yeah, and I don't think star players, like Anthony Davis is a star. I think like Caris LeVert, to guys on Anthony Davis' stratosphere, and it's a very small stratosphere, they look at Caris LeVert's cute. That's a cute little story going on over there. It's cute. Spencer Dinwiddie, that's a cute story. Wears different shoes every game, you know, most improved player candidate. Like, I need a guy.
Yeah.
I need a guy who in the NBA Finals against the Warriors, like, I know that the Warriors are going to be worried about that guy. Like, I think, and I don't know that the Nets have that. I don't think that's crazy. Wendy, do you have a crazy off-the-beaten-path team for me?
The Warriors for Kevin Durant? No, I'm just kidding.
I don't think the Warriors is crazy. I just don't think they have, I don't think they, I look, they've, they have publicly.
They're going to win the championship. They're going to win the championship.
They have publicly lusted before after Anthony Davis. I wrote this last week. I just don't see a pathway to go and get him, particularly during the season, as they've won 9 million games in a row and they're going to stomp everybody on the way to the championship.
I can float crazy stuff. Like, I could say, why don't the Thunder call and offer Russell Westbrook?
No.
But I mean, I just think the reality is it's a 3 or 4 team list.
That pitch bonks off the backboard like a wayward Russell Westbrook jump shot.
I was just throwing that out as a joke.
So I've been talking, as all of us have, to lots of people about the trade deadline over the last 2 weeks, and one thing I ask every front office person or agent I talk to is, you know, give me your two most interesting teams that are, don't say Memphis, don't say New Orleans, like give me like a team that just as a fan of the league you're curious about what they do. And it's just the same 3 or 4 teams keep coming up over and over again. So an interesting way to frame that same discussion is who is available and good that we maybe don't even know is available. Like, we know the Grizzlies guys are available. We know all the bad teams are selling all their veterans. We know that teams hope or wish that Kemba Walker and Bradley Beal are available because they're the sort of stars on bad teams, blah, blah, blah. But they're not available. So I've had that conversation a lot too. Like, who's gettable that maybe we don't know is gettable, or who could be gettable if a team decided to get a little braver and more creative? And Anthony Davis demands that we all get braver and more creative in forming fake trades. And one guy over dinner last week said, you know, who really, if they wanted to do something, if they really wanted to go for it.
I wonder if this is going to be the same guy I'm thinking of.
If Toronto put Pascal Siakam in trade talks, I wonder what they could get. And I thought, boy, I haven't thought of that, because when you think about teams, you just, certain guys you just put in a bucket. And he's in the untouchable young player bucket now. He's a borderline all-star. He's really good. He's a fantastic guy, blah, blah, blah. But if they put Pascal Siakam, and he wasn't talking about Anthony Davis. This guy was just talking about if Toronto just said, we're all in. It's Kawhi or bust. We are going for it whole hog. And if we fail, we're tanking. And we think Pascal's a complimentary player, not a star, so we're not afraid. If you put him in, now if you put Siakam, Anunoby, all the future picks, all the Valanciunas for salary filler, and he's good, he's decent, and all the picks you want, I don't think that gets it done, because I do think Siakam's a complimentary player, but a creative front office should have that on the whiteboard.
Is Kawhi on the same rookie crazy exception deal that Kyrie and AD are? Does Kawhi block a AD trade?
Oh, good question. I think that might be true.
That might be true. You might be right, but you just might have torpedoed.
But again, I just think it comes down to the three or four teams Anthony wants to play for. I just think that eventually, if even if you work out a deal, let's forget about any of the other rules. If you work out a deal, eventually there's going to be a conversation whether between Rich Paul or it's going to be between Anthony himself.
He's not. Kawhi's not.
He's not.
He's not. Because remember, they did the thing, wait so we can have your cap hold on the books.
Right.
Wait till you hit free agency. We'll sign LaMarcus, and then we'll re-sign you. So he's not. There are eight guys in the league who are, and he's not one of them.
Okay. So that one works. Why wouldn't could Portland get into this with a CJ McCollum, Yusuf Nurkic, and stuff?
Yeah, but see, but that's like, Portland's just not in on these.
These teams have to make the call. I think they all owe it to them. Like right now, it's probably already happened. All these teams had a meeting this morning and said either A, how can we make an offer for Anthony Davis, or B, how can we get in on the deal? You know, if Solomon Hill's got to get rerouted, can we house him and take a first round pick for it? Or hey, the Lakers may need pieces after this. Can we make a side deal with the Lakers? But I mean, I think everybody is incumbent on making an offer. Every team should call.
Well,
I think his list is three or four teams. That's what I'm going to keep coming back to.
On top of that, though, there's also the possibility that if they were going to make a, whether they're dealing Anthony Davis now or in July, chances are, and it's not a guarantee, but chances are this is now heading towards some sort of rebuild, which if that's the case, if you're another team, are you trying to pry loose Mirotić? Or some other useful piece from them? Like, are those guys available?
The answer is yes.
Yeah.
I think teams are for sure. Like if you put Mirotić on Utah right now, every time I watch Utah, I think, boy, I wish Jay Crowder were 10% better. Not 20% better, not 25% better, not a star. If Jay Crowder were 10% better, boy, oh boy, is that a dangerous team.
Well, and I just saw popping up via one of my Bleacher Report alerts here, so I don't know where the quote came from. Holiday, AD, quote, like 90% why I stayed. So Drew Holiday, obviously not going to be a happy camper. So, you know, is Drew Holiday now available?
I'm glad I put my big Drew Holiday profile up last week.
Yeah, I know. Good call. I was talking to some teams already this morning, Zach, about whether this would freeze the trade market. My belief is not necessarily, because I really think there's only three teams who can really, and Boston can't. So I really think it's a 2.5 team market, depending on what Philly does.
See, I don't know if they're on a whatever formal list exists, but I know that that's an organization that has the cachet with star players, and I think including AD. And they're just so starved for a star that I think that's another team.
What's the trade?
Well, you just throw everything. You just throw, like, all the stuff you were afraid to throw in for Jimmy Butler, you throw in, and then you run into the Bulls problem that I talked about before, which is that Anthony Davis then arrives, and it's like, okay, so it's me and Tyler Johnson and Kelly Olynyk. That's what we're rolling with. Like, Josh Richardson's gone, and Justice Winslow's gone, and Bam is maybe even gone.
And our first-round pick is gone.
Yeah, so that's the problem, but they'll make a call.
No, I think Miami, and I think you could say this about every available star in the market, Miami, if there was a different situation, would be in on all these people. I think they would be a bidder for Durant. I think they would be a bidder for Kawhi. But they're not. Their cap is loaded and their team is low on talent.
Can I give you another one? Can I give you guys another one? Ready?
I can't wait.
This is another one that I don't think is crazy. Buddy Hield, Marvin Bagley, salary filler, an unprotected first-round pick. And maybe that's it, because Hield and Bagley is a lot. So you go to Anthony and say, we got Fox. Fox is a guy. Fox is a guy.
Yeah.
Buddy Hield is really good, but he's not a guy. He's a very, very good player. Bagley, we don't need because we have you. We'll probably monetize Willie Cauley-Stein and get a future asset for him. He's available, by the way. You know, we got some other, we still got Harry Giles. We still got a couple other things. Like, I don't think, as crazy as this is to say about the Kings, I actually don't think they're going to fast forward what they have going on to this degree. But if I were running the Kings, that's on my whiteboard.
They should.
It's a three or four team list.
All right, but Brian, to your 3 or 4 team list, as it stands right now, 9 days, whatever the hell the number is, before the trade deadline, I'm not sure the list is relevant because you're still putting the Knicks on there, and the Knicks don't have the goods to do it right now.
But they're the Knicks.
No, they're not.
Wow. They're the Kazoos.
They are. They have no assets to trade right now.
I know that as of right now, Anthony Davis isn't demanding to be traded by the deadline. I think if he has to wait till the summer, I think he'll be okay with it.
I think, by the way, I'm glad you said that because I think so too. As much as this looks like a Lakers power play, and I kind of think it is a Lakers team power play, I don't think it's all or nothing for Anthony Davis. And the Celtics are very confident that it's not all or nothing for Anthony Davis. And I think he's okay playing out the season and waiting till the summer. I really do. I think this is a shake the trees and see what happens, and we'll frame it as this is best for the Pelicans because they get to shake as many trees as they want, and that's good. I don't think, like, if you put a gun to my head right now, the metaphorical gun to my head, the Nerf ball gun, and said, does he get traded by the deadline? I'm going no. Brian, what are you going?
No, unless he takes the next step. Which,
okay, so sure, but right now at 2:22 p.m. Eastern, you're going no, Howard.
No,
I can't see the Pelicans doing the deal. It does not make functional sense to do the deal now.
No, you want to have the best possible spread of offers available to you, and that doesn't exist right now, and won't exist until A, the lottery is completed, and B, the Celtics have the ability to make a deal with you, which is July 1st. So anything prior to that, I think would just be foolish.
Brian, I want you to go because I want you to get healthy, okay? I want you to go get healthy. There's an issue that I know that Howard is eager to talk about. So I can just talk about that with him. Go take a nap, okay?
Thank you, sir.
Get some chicken soup.
Thanks, Brian. Listeners, particularly those of you who are hiring people, another way to save time, the smartest way to hire, ZipRecruiter. You don't have to scour every job board in existence and post your ad and hope and pray that somebody finds you. ZipRecruiter solves all of that for you. It finds qualified candidates for you, the employer. It has powerful matching technology to scan thousands of resumes from all over and identify people with the right skills, education, and experience. And then, bonus, actively invites them to apply to your job. So it's doing the work for you. You get all the best qualified candidates fast. That's why ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S. This rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, my listeners, you find people can try ZipRecruiter for free. Literally, you cannot get it any cheaper than that unless they start paying you. All you have to do is go to this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost, all one word. That's the name of this podcast that you are listening to right now. If you love this show, show your support for it and ZipRecruiter by going to ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost, LOWEPOST, ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost, ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Another team that Howard is still here, by the way. Howard's right across from me in the studio. I'm surprised there hasn't been more Clippers.
Yes.
Buzz.
I was going to bring that up.
So go.
Well, they're in Los Angeles.
I don't know
if people are aware of this. There are two teams in L.A. So the story I wrote early in the season was about for the first time, because of Steve Ballmer, because of the roster they've assembled, because of the cap room they have, because of the much more sophisticated front office they have that they never had before, because of a great number of factors, the Clippers, for the first time in their history, can actually leverage the benefits of actually being an LA team. All that wonderful weather, all the nice things about, you know, beaches and houses and celebrities and swimming pools and movie stars, they can now leverage. They couldn't before. And yes, they still lack the cachet of the Lakers and all those banners. Understood. But there's more than one reason to want to be in LA than just the Lakers. Some guys just want to be there because of location. Thus, we're still hearing Kawhi being linked to the Clippers constantly, which, by the way, if you believe you're going to have Kawhi as a starting point, and the Clippers have, you know, at various times in conversations with other teams, been more than a little confident, maybe even cocky about the idea of getting Kawhi this summer. If they think they're getting him, that's a pretty nice carrot for AD to want to re-sign there. And that's a lower bar, by the way. Like, the Thunder had a high bar to keep Paul George, right? We know you want to be in LA, and we are the antithesis of Los Angeles as a city. And we know that that's even home for you, Southern California. But come here and we're going to make you comfortable, and lo and behold, Paul George stays. But that was a really high bar to cross to keep Paul George, make him happy, make him confident, make him want to stay. Much lower bar if it's like, I know you want to be at the other LA team, but you're still in LA and you're playing in the same building. And by the way, we've got a new building that we think we're going to build in Inglewood by 2024. And if they have Kawhi and AD together, I think that's a pretty, plus whatever else is still left of their assets, of their other players, that's phenomenal. They should be in this conversation.
They have a guy who's not quite on that Jamal Murray, you know, 22 and under, but I'm really confident he's going to be an all-star level guy. Like, that's the sweet spot for trades like this. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a level below that. He's younger. He's just starting. But I'm confident he's going to be really, really good.
Yes.
I don't know what the ceiling is yet. The ceiling might end up being higher. The dude is longer than like some power forwards and a very creative player who, once he gets a little more confident in his shot, I think has a chance to be a two-way force. But that's a guy that gets you in a lot of conversations. That's among the most intriguing rookies in the league. I think for some teams, even more intriguing than some of the high wattage big men that are out there.
I mean, he's also a guy you'd want to keep to play with Anthony Davis, presumably, but look, you got to give up something.
Got to give up something, and they don't have anything else that gets the conversation started.
As solid as they are, as deep as they are, it's all veterans, right? These are not the kind of pieces that you can make a deal like this with. But it's interesting to think back to the Chris Paul deal and the vetoed deal way back when, because the reason that David Stern, acting as the steward of that franchise, the reason that was overturned, that he overturned it, was because the Hornets at that time were going to end up with like Lamar Odom and Luis Scola and Kevin Martin. So it was going to be veteran guys. They were good players. Like at that time, like Lamar Odom had not fallen off the cliff, and Scola was still effective, and Kevin Martin was still like a 20 something a game scorer. But it wasn't like the young reset kind of package. I mean, the deal that they ultimately made with the Clippers was a more of a young reset kind of package. I don't want to bring this up just to like pour salt in wounds of anybody, whether it's New Orleans for losing Chris Paul or the Lakers for losing out on the chance to get him. But just to say that whether it's David Stern making the move or Mickey Loomis or Dell Demps or whoever, those are two different kinds of paths. And you alluded to this earlier, Zach. You go with stay competitive in the meantime, get veterans, because the Clippers are loaded with veterans. You could get a bunch of guys from the Clippers and be okay. Like, you're not going to be a playoff team.
Get the Clippers.
Yeah, you could become the Clippers. But with Drew Holiday, you've got Drew Holiday plus whatever you get from the Clippers. Or there's the, we need Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, or we need Jamal Murray, or we need, fill in player with young name, here. Those are two different paths, and we don't know what their goal will be. I do think that in a market that is a small market, that is an economically tough market, where it feels like they're always kind of hanging on by a fingernail anyway, I don't know if a full teardown is a great idea.
I would guess that they will want some more than the promise of blurry future assets, blocks of clay that are unmolded, and that's why the 22-year-old that's already good is sort of the sweet spot. That's why I said before, I could very much see Gordon Hayward playing for the Pelicans next season, just because that sort of fits like the... Then again, the Celtics have enough big salaries now. Like, Smart is now a big salary. Rozier will be a big salary. Even Jaylen Brown, because he was the third pick, is a pretty big salary. So they don't necessarily need like a $20 million salary to throw in like they used to, or a $30 million salary. I could just, that's a player I could see the Pelicans saying, hey, look, we got this guy, made an all-star team a couple years ago. Like, he's on our team now. That's exciting. The thing I wanted to talk about with you is that this, although this is not a surprise, you know, I've been saying all year he's going to turn down the Supermax. It is interesting, and the league and the union are going to have to revisit this, that the Supermax just hasn't worked the way they thought it would.
No.
It's turned into one of two things. Number one, a terrible contract that teams actively seek to avoid, and or it torpedoes their teams, like John Wall, and nobody wants to say this yet, but that Russell Westbrook contract could be very, very bad. Or it's turned into a carrot that isn't appetizing enough for the players that really it's designed for. No-brainer, top seven NBA players. Kawhi Leonard, no thanks. Anthony Davis, no thanks. I don't know what the solution is, but it hasn't worked, and that's bad for the league. And again, I pitched some things over the summer that were – I pitched some crazy ideas over the summer that were designed to mitigate the downside risk that Washington and Oklahoma City – and the Bulls, had they signed Jimmy Butler to the Supermax, et cetera, are facing. And people can go look at that column. It was like a once every 15 years amnesty. It was for just those kinds of players. That's it. Not general amnesty, just those kinds of players. It was maybe those kind of players don't count against the luxury tax. It was just, but I didn't have a lot of ideas to, give the home team even more of an advantage or so. And I just don't know what those are, but I know you've spent a lot of time about this. So as you've reflected, like, is there anything to be done here? Was the Supermax a net negative? Like was the banishing of the extend and trade transaction, the Carmelo Anthony transaction, a net negative because now you have players a year earlier agitating to get out? I don't know what the answers are, but I know you've spent a lot of time thinking about this.
I have, and some of these issues were kind of, you know, addressed or folded into, you know, just in passing in the story I wrote in December about
Giannis.
Giannis, yeah, because Giannis, you know, for people who weren't following along here, Giannis is the next AD. You know, where AD was when this season began, that will be Giannis this coming season on a much different, much better team, mind you.
The Bucks are 35-13.
Big fat asterisk. Not analogous, except in point in career and contract status. In that, by the end of next season, it's Giannis who will have the Supermax extension available to him. And if he were to reject it, then it would be the same set of circumstances. Much less reason to think that will happen because the Bucks have been really, really good. And I think by all indications, he will probably end up staying. And my story was much more about the idea of what they were doing to avoid the AD emergency. But it's him next. And then it'll be like Dame Lillard, I think, after that. And it will always be someone. The Supermax hasn't worked for a variety of reasons, but I think the bottom line one is this. And this is really hard to prove, right? But I've had enough discussions with people that I think this is a solid point. In the old days, you know, of bird rights, the incentive to stay was really big. You got a lot more money over more years to stay. That was the whole concept of bird rights. Not only that you could exceed the cap, but that your home team gets to give you more years with bigger raises, and it's a big fat number that's like $30 million more than the other one. Well, it's still that, except that, as I was pointing out in the story about AD and Giannis last month, these are the calculations that I got at the time. The Pelicans could offer a $240 million extension as a Supermax. And then if he were traded and signed an extension with the new team, Davis would get $205 million. Now, that's a difference of $35 million. That is a lot of money, and that has always been about the differential between your current team and your other team if you were leaving via without bird rights. $30 million when it was 120 versus 90 was something. $30 million when it's 240 versus 205? I'm sorry, you're still walking away with $200 million. So what the NBA, I think, underestimated in all this is that now that the league is so fabulously wealthy, and with the players getting 50% of it through the BRI split, $200 million is such a big number that there is no financial incentive to stay. The Supermax doesn't work because the NBA is too successful, and because the union, even though they quote unquote lost in negotiations in 2011 in the lockout, going from 57% of BRI to 50%. 50% is still getting them 50% of a massive number, and that massive number is turning into massive maxes. And there's just not enough in the system as constructed, based on concepts that they came up with 30 years ago, to give a financial incentive to stay anymore. That's where it breaks down.
Well, plus, a player as good as Anthony Davis can not game the system, but could use the seniority rules to his advantage and just sign short term, when I can lock in the biggest one, 35% max, I can just do that. And so I can, instead of locking myself into the 30% max, I can go one year, boom, now I cash in.
It's another piece of old conventional wisdom that doesn't hold. The old conventional wisdom was, if you offer players big guaranteed contracts, they'll always take it, because they'll always take security over anything else. And that's why Scottie Pippen was perpetually signing under market contracts and screwing himself, because the carrot of long-term guaranteed deals as a hedge against injury or anything else was powerful. It's not now, because you can go year to year. If back then, year to year might be $5 million, $7 million. Now year to year means $25, $30 million. And if you had the catastrophic injury, well, one, you've taken out insurance on yourself of some sort. Mm-hmm. Two, you've made such a gargantuan amount that it, I don't want to say it doesn't matter, but it's just an easier trade-off to make. So we can't keep using the conventional wisdom of the 80s and 90s and how the CBA was constructed then as the incentive structure to apply to 2019, especially when today's player, in part because they're already fabulously wealthy, they're prioritizing winning and title contention and playing with friends and playing on super teams and all these other things over the money. That's why this entire system has been turned on its head, and we've had all this movement, because the money and the contracts, it's not powerful enough to keep guys in place.
And I don't know if there's anything to be done, because I don't know that I'm comfortable giving the incumbent team more of an advantage. Because I remember in the 2011 lockout, the words franchise tag were uttered.
Absolutely.
Like, that was, I don't know if it was, I don't remember.
I think it was off the table very quickly.
Yeah, I don't know to the degree that it was formally proposed, but it was out there. And, you know, I'm not sure that I want the incumbent teams to have more of an advantage than they already have, because they already have all these years with players. Restricted free agency after their rookie contracts is a huge advantage. And the money advantage in year eight when they hit free agency again is I guess not big enough, but how much bigger do we want it? Because the bigger it is, the worse the John Wall contract gets if you give it to the wrong player. The worse, yeah. Whatever. I just don't know what the answer is. And by the way, the NBA has a vested interest in player movement. This is day one of Super Bowl week, and the biggest story in sports is not the Super Bowl.
I see. I think this cuts two ways. Yes, you're right. The league loves movement and loves talk about movement and loves transactions and rumors and all the stuff that we put out on Twitter and all the other, you know, the chatter about the NBA that's made it a 12-month-a-year league and that can steal headlines from the Super Bowl this week. You're right, Zach. I don't disagree for a minute. And in their more honest moments, they will admit it, the league. However, isn't it also in their interest? And by they, I mean not the people in Olympic Tower, but the 30 owners that they serve, the vast majority of whom are not in this discussion. Remember, when Brian Windhorst tells us earlier in the podcast multiple times, this is a three-team thing. It's not a coincidence those are like three glamour teams in glamour markets. So,
but your point, your rebuttal to him about Oklahoma City and Toronto is on point.
Sure. Like
they weren't on the lists either.
They weren't. But the point with it, when it comes to free agency or guys forcing their way out or small market franchises losing their franchise player. The issue for the league is, yes, the chatter is fun and it's good for the league and blah, blah, blah. The flip side is it good for the league that Indiana is always going to lose a Paul George to something? It was the threat of a bigger market. He didn't lose him he went to a smaller market, sure. But it's because of the threat of the bigger market. And that San Antonio lost Kawhi because of the threat of the bigger market, LA. And New Orleans is going to have to trade Anthony Davis either to a big market or some other team's going to acquire him with the threat of him going to the big market. I mean, it's still the slow drip or very rapidly increasing drip of players having left non – I don't like saying small market, big market, because sometimes like Miami, yeah, it's a mid market. It's not a big – okay, but Miami's a glamour market. In general, what has happened in the last 10 years ever or 9 years ever since LeBron left Cleveland the first time is – guys going from non-glamour markets to glamour markets, whether that's Gordon and Gordon Hayward, by the way. Like, Boston may not be a glamour market, but it's certainly a glamour team, a team with cachet.
But they weren't before, ever.
But, right, they weren't.
Ever.
They were never a free agent destination.
Nobody wanted to go
until,
there.
Until Al Horford went there. Like, he was like the first guy to
and
go.
And they would say, well, we didn't have cap space for like some preposterous amount of time. Like, Dana Barros' cap hold was on our books forever.
But Boston is a big market and a storied team. So again, I'm going to put them in the destination market over the non-destination market. But there are more non-destination markets than destination markets. So if the calculation from the league level is what's best for the league, I think you have to consider what the cost has been, the impact has been to Utah and Indiana and Oklahoma for losing Durant and on and on down the list. And New Orleans losing Chris Paul the first time, now Anthony Davis this time. If you keep going and going, like, there's – what is the long-term cost? And I don't know the answer to this. I raise it more out of concern and empathy for the smaller markets. But also, I think it's a more global concern for the NBA.
Well, Utah had Stockton and Malone forever.
Completely different era,
but I'll
where
bet
guys
you,
did stay.
I'll bet you if they're good, they'll have Mitchell and Gobert for a long time. If they're good, I'll bet you it's 2030, 2029, and Mitchell is on Utah.
Didn't they do – have we all agreed that they did almost everything right and still lost Gordon Hayward, right?
Well, they played hardball with him when he was a
– That was the – that's why I said almost.
Free agent.
That was the almost
and
part.
And I don't think that wound ever totally healed.
That was the almost part. Almost everything right. I'm saying that when you create a winning environment, right, people are going to say, well, hey, you know what? New Orleans had him for 7 years. They deserve to lose him. They couldn't. All right, fine. I'm not going to disagree. Like, New Orleans didn't exactly, decorate themselves in the way that they built around Anthony Davis. But the Jazz did pretty much everything right in terms of roster construction, competitiveness, whatever. They played things right. They lost Gordon Hayward anyway. That's the break sometimes. The Thunder certainly didn't do anything wrong to lose Kevin Durant. We could go down a whole rabbit hole there, but
they left Klay Thompson open too many times.
The point being that I wonder if there is a greater cost here. I wonder if the small markets as a whole.
Totally agree. I don't like when Memphis is a farm system for the Lakers, and not that has happened, but I don't like that Milwaukee has to live in terror of Giannis leaving for an allegedly more glamorous city. By the way, I love Milwaukee. I love downtown Milwaukee. Like walking around downtown Milwaukee, like the bars.
And by the way, the arena
like
has
the
actually
cheese grits or whatever they are.
The arena has sparked some stuff down there too. Like it's nice.
Fiserv
right there.
Or Fiserv? Fiserv?
Fis, I have no
Fiserv.
Idea.
Fiserv?
I'm not even going to try it. There's two capitals.
It's a bottom five name already.
Capital F, capital S. That's awkward.
It's just a terrible arena name.
It's a great
very
arena.
Nice
though, by
arena.
No,
terrible name.
Yeah, the arena's great.
They should name it after Giannis if that's what it takes. Whatever it takes.
I would rename Milwaukee after Giannis.
Giannis, what's the word for a Greek theater? The Giannis amphitheater or something.
Absolutely.
I just don't, I empathize, completely agree. I just don't, I haven't heard an idea that sells me because, These teams do have – I actually think the NBA has struck a fairly artful balance of – and remember, going back to the days when Glenn Robinson could sign a $100 million contract right out of college and Chris Webber could be on a different team immediately after his rookie year. I think the NBA has actually struck a pretty artful balance of, you get the guy's rookie contract and you have such a huge advantage after that. You get him for a pretty long time. You can act with confidence that you're going to have him for a pretty long time. You don't have to act in year two. In fact, I think that's what the cardinal sin of the Pelicans is, that they acted in year two like Anthony Davis could leave in a year, and which wasn't the case. They've struck a pretty nice balance, and I just haven't heard an idea for you get to year seven. What is the thing other than winning that gives New Orleans an advantage? That is fair to the player, is good for the league. I haven't heard the idea.
So here are the things that we can dismiss out of hand, right? Franchise tag, forget it. One, just kind of fundamentally unfair to the player and flies against everything about free agency and all the progress that players and players unions have made over decades. And by the way, it's DOA anyway.
Yes.
It'll be just like the hard cap. Let's welcome to the new CBA negotiations. It's 2024. Let's talk about, we'd like a hard cap. Union says no. Okay. Well, all right. Moving on. Every time they've introduced the hard cap, it goes away. Every time you introduce franchise tag, it's just going to be like slapped off the table within the first 1.3 seconds of the meeting. So there is no franchise tag. We've seen now that Supermax, more money, doesn't do it. You could go super duper max and add on another $50 million or whatever, but to your point, now you have the John Wall problem even greater. And it still may not work. The only other thing I can think of that seems logical to me directly, I have some indirect ideas, but the direct idea would be, and it's dangerous again, the league has spent many, many years and many CBAs making contracts shorter because shorter contracts means less risk. And you don't end up with the Juwan Howard deal from back in the day, or the Glenn Robinson deal, or the what were some of the other like massive crazy deals from back then that ended up being the albatross contract,
David Lee's 7-year contract,
right? But before that, there didn't used to be even a limit on. Before that, there was like not even a limit on 7 years. But yes, I think Juwan's was a 7-year. So I know they don't want to probably go down this path, but if the Pelicans could have offered Anthony Davis 10 years. 8 years? Not now. I mean on this previous contract. So you avoid this moment. Now, it might take a player out of free agency in his prime, based on the way the math works with contracts stacked on contracts. But the one way to do this is to go back to an older version of the NBA where when you knew you had a guy, great player, and your advantage over the other teams was, he's already here and he's comfortable. Let's see what he says to 7 years, 8 years, 9 years, back when there was no limits. But you can, right now the limit is 5. That's the most you can ever offer a guy. And if it's an extension, it still can't exceed 5, which is another problem. That, by the way, they could address this extension rules.
The extension rules should be more liberal.
They should be. They should be able to offer.
That's a good point.
They should be able to offer Anthony Davis, the Pelicans, should be able to offer Anthony Davis right now a deal that's 5 after the year that's still left on his contract, which is next year. They should be able to offer him the same thing he would be getting in free agency.
I would be up for the. You should be able to offer anyone up to the max, no matter what their salary is. None of this 20% of the plus of the average salary, 175% of this or whatever. Everything.
When did AD sign this contract that he's on right now?
12:01 a.m. in the summer of either 2015 or 2016, I think.
All right, so let's roll back the clock to 2015 if that's when he signed it. If they could have offered him, instead of the very limited, was it a 4-year, 5-year extension? If they could have offered him 8? Now, they wouldn't be in this boat right now. Maybe they'd still be in this boat 3 years from now if they couldn't figure it out. But they would have bought themselves a much longer window to build around him. The counter to that is, hey, they had long enough. They blew it. My counter to that counter, by the way, is this. Guys come in the league, even Anthony Davis, who was by far easily the consensus number one, and everybody thought he was going to be exactly as great as he is. Still took a couple of years to get there. So first you got to give the guy time to become the star that you think he's going to be. Then you know what you have to build around. By that time, a couple of other drafts have gone by, other free agent periods have gone by. I mean, the window's not quite as long. We all glibly say you had your 7 years. It's not.
Yeah, normally you're bad. If you're drafting a player this good, normally you're bad in year one.
Yeah.
And you're a little bit less bad in year two because that player is so good. And maybe you're actually not bad enough already. This was the LeBron curse, right? Yeah. LeBron was so good that the Cavs never picked in the top 5 again.
Yeah. So immediately you're now drafting from a position of weakness. And yet most of these guys do not become all-stars until their third or fourth year. Nobody becomes an all-star as a rookie anymore in this league. Very, very, very rare. You're getting them at 19. So by the time they become the all-star that you now think you have to build around, the franchise star, you're several years in, and you've been drafting lower and lower progressively. So it's not that simple. We got to be a little less glib about, you had your 7 years.
Yeah.
And LeBron left Cleveland the first time coming off like a 62-win season.
Yeah, Sasha Pavlovich wasn't enough to get him to stick around.
No, but... point being, they didn't have another star there, and to this day, I've always said I understand exactly why he left. It was justifiable, but it's not like they were flailing. Guys leave flailing teams, they leave 62-win teams.
Well, all the Cavs had to do after that was win the lottery 3 times in 4 years, so maybe the Pelicans will win the lottery 3 times in 4 years. All right, we got to stop, because we can talk about AD forever. We have 10 days until the trade deadline. We're going to have plenty to talk about. Howard Beck's podcast is the full 48. On the draft and other things this morning. You can read him at Bleacher Report. He's the best. Howard, we will surely talk again soon, because the news ain't going to stop. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Zach.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.